Hello and welcome to the Let's Talk Wealth podcast, where we dive deep on wealth, what it takes to get it, keep it, and grow it. I'm your host, Jay Hugh, CEO of Hughes Funding, and on today's episode, we're talking about real estate. More specifically, we're talking about investment real estate. Our guest, James Ford of ATB Development, has done the rehabs. He's done the fix and flips. He's done the rental units. And today he's here to answer our questions and give us information that we need to be able to get into the real estate business and be successful at it. So I won't make you wait any longer. We're just going to dive right into this week's episode. So before we get into all of my questions, how about you tell the people a little bit about yourself, your story, how you got into wealth creation?
I got into wealth creation by not wanting to be super broke. First of all, how's everybody doing out there? Good. Tuning in, and hopefully the things we say can inspire you or help you to be at that bread. I got into it by knowing that there was something better for me. There was something better out there. I was a barber at the time, and a lot of wealthy people would come to the shop, and I just took inventory. There were doctors. It was easy to get things. It's easy to access things that were hard for a lot of people because I catered to the doctors, the dentists, the drug dealers, the preachers, the police officers. Everybody came in the shop. And by me being able to touch those different types of people, I knew the lower class socially, economically, to the upper class. And their conversation was different. How they lived was different. How they executed their viewpoints, their point of view was different. And I really liked what I heard from the people that were wealthy and had money. I agree with a lot of things, but a lot of things had to be different. Mentally, it was all a decision that you made on the path to being able to have an income like theirs. So I started on my way, made every mistake possible, and I can help people go around those mistakes.
Okay.
I made them all.
I forgot about the barber part, but we gonna get to that. I forgot about that part. I wrote it down and everything. So we're going to get to that one. Before all my other questions, first question is the question I ask every guest when they come on the show, right?
Okay.
In your opinion, what is the biggest, best kept secret for creating wealth?
The biggest, best kept secret is the illusion that it has to be hard.
The illusion that it has to, you got to break that down.
Okay. So the first thing they say, oh, it takes a lot of hard work to do this. It takes a lot of hard work to do that. You have to grind and you have to this and you have to that. So when you think of work, you think of going somewhere and doing something for a long time. And because you're spending all your time and you're giving all your best effort, you think you deserve a large sum of money. The hard work that they're talking about has nothing to do with actual work. It has to do with personal growth, meaning when you don't know something, when you don't know the outcome of the thing that you don't know, when you don't know something, you don't know the outcome of the thing you don't know, and you don't know the person you can ask, will you quit? Those are hard decisions that you have to make. Or will you become resourceful? It's all about resources. It's not about how much money. It's not about how many people. It's not about how many people don't want to help you. It's about the one right resource, the one yes, and the one positioning. What do you want to do? Okay. What you want to do, you have to be in a certain position to do it. How do you get in that position? Talk to somebody who's already there because they know a person that knows the person that knows the person that's going to say yes to you getting there. This person wants money, but I don't have the money they want. Okay, how do you get the money they want? Or how do you give this person something that they need instead of the money you want? So then it becomes hard because of the sacrifices that you have to make. You pay $10 for lunch every day. That's $100 every 10 days. That's $300 a month on top of whatever you're doing. So don't buy breakfast and lunch. Now you're at $600 a month. You don't even see the money coming or going. Make yourself a sandwich, take a banana, at the end of the month, you got that $600 to put towards whatever it is you need to pay. And that's what makes it hard, not how much work you do. And the illusion that is hard is this. Once you have your credit in place and you leverage that, the world, I mean, you have your plan in place now. Plan in place meaning this, escaping as many potholes and pitfalls as possible. You're not going to escape them all, but escape as many as possible. And you have to talk to people to do that. What I do now is before I go into an area, I get a mentor in that area. And it's usually going to take 1 to 2 to 3, because one is only going to know but so much. And then you're going to get another one and another one, and you have to be willing to do that. That's the hard part. So those things are hard. It's nothing to do with manual labor all the time. It's not manual labor. There will be some instances, like the construction field I'm in. Yeah, I had to do a lot of manual labor, but I was making connections. I was the one going in the bank. The manual labor part is not hard. It's doing that plus your paperwork, plus meeting those new people, plus getting good at doing estimates. Plus, that's what makes it hard. Not the fact that I did a lot of work, because now that I've done all those things, the work is the one thing I don't have to do anymore.
Okay. All right. I like that answer. So it's the illusion that it takes hard work.
Yes.
Okay. So
meaning hard physical labor only.
Right.
People think only hard physical labor. If you do that, it'd be a lot of rich people if that was the case.
Indeed. I know I used to do a whole lot of physical labor, and I ain't getting nowhere with that one. And okay. Right. So how do you go from barber to CEO of Block to Broadway, an entertainment company that does music, film, video? I think I saw somewhere in there it does production as well, to CEO of ATB Development, which is a whole nother type of industry because it's home renovations. So how do you go from barber to all of that?
Very easily. When you're in the barbershop, and then you go from there to a barber and beauty shop. The things on a day-to-day basis is a movie in itself.
Okay.
The man that cheated on his girlfriend, and his girlfriend is one of the beauticians, and he comes in there, and they're marching out, and they're saying what they're saying. She slaps him, and they pull this out. It happens right in front of you, the whole episode. The police comes in, and he doesn't want to make the report. So whatever he took possession of, he gives it away. Or I shouldn't say that, but it's a lot of crazy things happen in the barbershop. We've seen, man, it was a guy came in to rob the shop. The one guy came in, and because we had a buzzer in the door. So he buzzed the door, and he put something in the door. And without just force of habit, the door's not closed, the AC is on. So we took the thing out the door, and somebody came in with the guns out, and boom, their whole face hit the door. They couldn't get in and stuff like that. They were crammed against the door, and they couldn't get in because we had the glass and the door was locked, and you had the buzzer only, and you couldn't just hit a handle and come in and stuff like that. And they had to run away. So we were all like standing there, and we're looking at each other like, the other guy came in and opened the door so he can come in and rob us. We were almost just robbed. So now it's a whole conversation, and don't nobody want to leave yet. We're walking each other to each other's cars. So we come in the next day, and there's another story that happens that day. Let's go out to the club tonight. Okay, cool. One of the guy's girlfriends bring all his clothes up to the shop. You hanging out with them so much? Why don't you move in with them? Now she throws all his clothes in there and drops the baby y'all. And he's out getting lunch. So when he comes back, his baby and his clothes is in the shop. We're burping the baby. Hey, man, what you going to do? We're still going out tonight, though, but I don't know what you're going to do. You know what I'm saying? So
it's wow. Like,
things are constantly happening. And that barbershop is crazy. Then you have instances where there's no clients, and you think of things like, okay, man, let's make an invention. We have a book of things that we invented. One invention, I think it's already out now, but I'm not sure. It's for people in handicapped people that can't really have their body function. I don't know if I should be saying this, but we came up with something called the mouse glove. You just put the glove on and that moves the mouse to the keyboard and stuff like that. You're able to move it along the screen and stuff like that. We came up with that, man. That's 20 years old to me. So to see something now where you have a hologram screen, we was talking about that in a barbershop 20 years ago. And then that's the main thing that got me to where I am now. Coming up with all those things and not executing on any of them, it's a sad thing. And I always put that in correlation to the guy with the pet rock. He came out with a pet rock and drew faces on this rock and made a million dollars, selling people rocks that they could find on the ground.
And so, drew a face on it.
And it did draw the face on the rocks. Google it. Pet rock. You probably heard of it before. He draw a little smiley face on the pet rock because, you know, people love pets. And he just hit on that pain point. You don't have to feed it. You have a pet rock sitting in your house that he went to the beach and picked up the rock and sold it to you. So if he can do that.
Gary Dow. Yeah.
Yes.
Billionaire. Yeah.
Yeah. If he can do that, I should be able to execute on what I see. Right. Yeah. I don't have to. I can tell stories that I see in the barbershop and have scripts for days. And I just bought a camera and said, hey, I'm going to shoot a movie about a guy. He's a nerd, but he wants to be in music and he wants the girl of his dreams. But the fairy swag mother is going to give him a ring called the Swag Diamond. When he puts this ring on, he's going to become this awesome character that everybody loves. And then he's going to meet a guy named Fried Chicken. That his street name is Fried Chicken, and he wants the ring. So when he puts the ring on, he becomes a Black Panther called Fried Chicken. His name in the movie is 1985, because that's all. He dressed like he's from 1985 and everything. But when he puts the ring on, he becomes Fried Chicken. And
now this is Mike Lowry, right?
The movie called I Think I'm Mike Lowry, because when the guy puts it on, he thinks he's Mike Lowry. And then he names himself Mike Lowry, because that's the character he thought he was. And it's just a hilarious movie. I shot the movie wrong. I didn't know how to do the editing and the production the right way, but there were 360 people in the movie theater. We sold out. We had to go get folding chairs. Everybody laughed, and it just took off without me really being prepared for what was going to happen.
Okay. All right. So how do you get – okay, so that's barbershop to entertainment mogul, right? Now, how do you transition from there to ATB development?
Okay. Again, the people in the barbershop, I went to carpentry school in high school. There used to be high schools called vocational schools.
I remember those.
Okay, right. So in vocational schools, you would go to every vocation, and then your junior, senior year, you would pick one to stay at for the 2 years. I picked carpentry. So it was just something me and my friends did. It was not a lot of studying. You could bang stuff and beat stuff. You could take tools and drill stuff. It was a perfect fit.
Right.
So I would do bathrooms for my clients to get some extra money. Okay. So they would say, man, my bathroom needs remodeled. I could do that. What do you need? So I would do their bathroom. One client led to another person's auntie, things like that. But I would never leave the shop and do that. Totally full time. So one day, one of my clients, she was a female. She said, can you do my kitchen? Well, I said, no, I only do bathroom. I'm only comfortable bathroom. She was like, a kitchen is the same as a bathroom. You have water. Matter of fact, it's less because you don't even have a toilet or a shower. All you have is a kitchen sink and there's floor and walls. And besides hanging the cabinets up, I said, you're right. So I tried it. Came out beautiful. I said, wow. So there was a time when I was just ready to be done with the barbershop, but I didn't know what that next thing would be. When the truck driving school, the HVAC school, started working with my dad at the church, started preaching and teaching and doing all kinds of things like that. And I think it was my wife that told me, you do all these other things and then you go make money rehabbing houses. Then you do all these other things, you go make money rehab. Why don't you try just rehabbing houses full time and just see how it goes? I said, that's a great idea. She was like, yeah, because you love doing it. Lo and behold, that was just it, because everything is messed up and broke when I arrive, but it's fixed and looking beautiful when I'm leaving and the person's happy. And then I got paid and I saw the amount of money that I made in such a short span of time. And that was it. It was beneficial both ways, because you got to think, you do the bathroom, kitchen, your house, you raising the value of your home at least by 15 to 30,000, depending on what you put in it. So
right.
You're not wasting money at all. You're actually investing. And we do really great work. So it was perfect.
Okay. Now, when you started ATB Development, that's also when you started getting into real estate, correct? Like, from the business standpoint.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
So I guess my question would be at that point, as someone who doesn't know, literally, how do you first kind of get going in real estate as a business, whether it be a fix or flip or a rental property or whatever the case may be?
From what I understand, the most productive way to me, and I actually have this written down in a course called 6 Steps to Becoming to Own Your First Property.
Okay.
Yeah, the 6 Steps to Own Your First Income Property. And it is actually only 6 steps because what the steps encompass. And there may be a learning curve for each step, and that's the purpose of each step. So to rush through them to get a property, you would skip over things that you would need later on in the future. Just like getting addition and subtraction and then going all the way up to calculus, passing through algebra and everything else. But when it's time to check your bank ledger, your bank balance, and do everything like that, you're going right back down to the basics and subtraction. So these steps are a system that stays with you. And when you follow the system, it works for everything. No matter what you do, it works for everything. I had a conversation with one of my lenders just yesterday. And I was like, man, people encourage you to do one thing. But I know a guy, he has a horse farm. He has a car wash. He has things that he does in the wintertime with snow plows. He's doing all these different things. And the lender said the same thing I'm saying now. He has those different avenues, but it's the same system that right. He uses. That's one thing, his system. So this system is 6 steps to becoming to having your first income property, but you can use it for anything. And the first step is credit.
Okay, credit.
Yes. The very first step is credit.
So when you say credit, are you talking business credit or personal credit?
So you can do business credit first, but you have to be even more skilled at business credit than personal credit. For the ones that have the year they want to use to do business credit, they can take those years. But the ones who actually want to begin now, you can do personal credit at the same time you do business credit, because they're both important. They're both very important. But you could have your first income property with your personal credit.
Okay, so what are you doing with your personal credit within the 6 steps to your first income property course? Like walk us through the 6 steps, because it's credit leverage and so forth. But specifically with your personal credit, at that stage, what are you doing?
Okay. Here are the 6 steps. Credit leveraging, exit, your team, choosing the right property, and choosing the right tenant.
Okay.
Yes, those are the 6 steps. Now, credit, what I mean by credit is getting your score to that number that says yes. You want your score to a yes score. So how I found out what the yes score was, getting turned down, going for loans and going for credit cards and them saying no. Mm-hmm. People take no and say, okay, maybe I'm not supposed to be doing this, or maybe I'm not. I have this thing I say where rejection is direction. When someone rejects you, just ask them why. Because you don't have this, because you don't have this, because you don't have this, and you need one of these. They just told you how to get their money. You just reverse engineer it. You go get this, you go get that, and you get more of these. And then you go, guess what they say? They say yes.
Okay.
And your credit, when I say credit, I mean your score, and I also mean your profile. Usually, they want a few different trade lines on there, a few different trades. Primary, you need two. Trades are accounts that people gave you. Credit, okay. Macy's may have given you $1,000 credit card. That's a trade line. That's a trade.
Okay.
That's what a trade is. So This reports to your credit. Hey, I trust him with this amount of money to do business with us. All the store, most stores have them, even credit cards, Capital One, Discover, things like that. You have a certain score, certain criteria on your credit report. They say, hey, we can trust someone here. So now you have other people that trust you, and don't do self-lender. People say to do self-lender is when you loan yourself the money. You go to a bank and you say, hey, I want to give you $300, and then you give me the money back to me, and I'll use it as a credit card. I'll trust myself to show other people that they can trust me. So when you're doing things at a higher level, because property and real estate and things like that, those are the higher level. When you do things at a higher level, and that's your thinking, okay, me going to work for this $7 an hour, that's cool to barely survive. But when you want to operate at a higher level, it's going to take a higher level of thinking, not for you to be a brainiac, just a higher level of thinking. Okay, I need to think bigger. What's bigger? I need to have a credit profile. I need other people trusting me. I need a long length of time. How do you get 10 years worth of credit history today? You get a trade line. We already discussed what a trade was. That was a primary, something you went and got yourself. So if somebody has a 10-year-old card and they put your name on that card, that amount of credit history goes on your credit report, and that's called a trade line. So now you gave this person the money they asked for. They made you an authorized user on their card. Now that card shows up on your credit report. That history, that credit usage, shows up on your report. It raises your credit score, but it also helps your credit profile. Not just the score, it helps your profile, because the winning profile is a 680 credit score or better, two primary trades, one trade that's 10 years older or more, and one of those trades have to be $5,000 or more. With on-time payments, of course, and low usage. Credit is also low usage. If you have a $300 credit card, you want to stay under 30%, which means you have a $100 credit card. Now, is there times where you can use the whole $300? Yes, when you're going to pay the $300 down before your statement. And that's the other credit thing. See, there's a statement date and a bill date. Bill date is when you pay the bill. Statement date is when your statement comes out. Do you know that if your bill date, you pay the bill on your bill date, you may get 5 to 10 points for paying it. But if you pay on your statement date, you'll get 10 to 20. It doubles what your score is, because you don't need the money for that whole length of time. So just take your car note for instance. You pay once a month, $400. You're paying on time. That's beautiful. But when you pay $200 twice a month, so there's $200 that you didn't borrow for the full 30 days. So now your interest comes down and your payments look even better. Because now, guess what? They have to register both payments. So if they give you 10 points each time you pay, if you pay twice, they have to give you 20 points.
So if you have a monthly bill and you break it up into two payments a month, but you still pay the regular total amount, you just break it up within two payments, is not so much helping you pay it off early, but it's helping you increase your profile and score versus doing it the regular way. Because I've heard people say, do it that way, and then you'll end up paying it off 3 months early. And I'm like, how are you paying it off 3 months early if you're still paying the same amount of money?
So what they're saying, what they mean by paying 3 months early is this. Okay, I want 3% on $400 for 30 days. Okay, I'm going to give you 3% on $400 for 30 days. But I didn't use $400 for 30 days. I used $200 of it for 15 days. So $200 for 30 days. So half of that month, you only get 3% of the 200, not the 4, which cuts your time of at the end of your loan. It'll come up to, okay, on all these years, you're paid off 4 months early because you use this process over time. So they are right, but we're not concerned about that because we talk about credit leveraging, and I'll show you why we're not concerned about paying it off early. That's the long game. What we're doing is we're trying to get to your first income property. So what we want to do is play with the score. We want to play with the profile so that score can bump up and bump up, because you'll get to a point where you're stuck at a certain score. When you're stuck at a certain score, that's when you have to play the game by the rules that they set up that you don't know they set up. And you listen to podcasts like this and find little gold nuggets. So, so you can do things with your card that says, okay, let me swipe something and let me pay this. So people think a zero balance is good. A zero balance is not good. A dollar balance is better than a zero balance because there's something reporting. We have a zero balance. There's nothing to report. You're not doing anything. You have it, but you're not doing anything. So check this out. I juggle balls, tennis balls. Mm-hmm. So I'm looking at, somebody's looking at my, and they're gauging me on my credibility to juggle tennis balls. I have one tennis ball. This is my credit profile. I have one credit card. Juggling that is easy. I'm not impressed. Go ahead and stay with your one card. You can juggle one, that's fine. That don't mean I can give you $100,000 because you can juggle one. Now, you have two balls. One is $5,000 and one is $2,500. Or one is $2,500 and one is $300. But you're still juggling the two balls. Okay, that's a little bit more interesting. Matter of fact, why don't we take one of those balls out and put my ball there? You got a $2,500 card and a $300 card. Let me give this $5,000 card so you don't need neither one of those. That's how they think. Okay. You're juggling three balls because you got that authorized user. Now you like this. You got a $10,000 ball, a $500 ball, a $2,500 ball, and they're looking at you juggle, and you're doing all kinds of tricks, and you're saying, a trick is this. Oh, this reported twice. That means he paid twice. Now, to them, that's not a regular juggle. You did something behind the back or something like that. They're impressed. Okay. They're impressed because you're working it. You're working the tricks. Matter of fact, I saw how he paid. He raised up. He paid the whole – he used the whole $500 and paid the whole $500 off before the 30 days came up and left a $10 balance so they can report the fact that you used it and you paid it off. Now they're going to report it. Oh, wow. Okay, he ran it up and paid it off. Oh, man, we're going to give him 20 points for that. Oh, boom. Now you're just doing all behind-the-back tricks and everything. Now add more balls. The more interesting it is, the more fantastic it is. Oh, he's juggling 10 balls. Oh, my. He's amazing. He's not even sweating. Now, would you pay to see somebody juggle two balls, or would you pay to see somebody juggle 10? You're going to pay
for the 10.
You're going to pay because it's amazing. That's why people that have it get more.
Okay.
It's amazing. You're able to do it. You have the credibility to do it. And I don't want to bring the Bible into this, but there was a story in the Bible where the king gave these people talents for money. He gave 1 to 1, 5 to 1, and 10 to the other. The one with the 5 doubled his and came back. The one with the 10 doubled his and came back. The one with the 1 buried his. He wanted to save it. So he can have it when he came back. So the king said, you with the 1, take that and give it to the guy with the 10. You ain't even using it. You don't need it.
Right.
The guy with the 5, you came back with, you juggled 5 and you turned your 5 into 10. That's perfect. The guy with the 10, he was rotating his 10. So he could have gave it to the guy with the 5. He could have gave it because the guy with the 5 was doing good. He gave it to the guy with the 10. He gave it to the guy that can handle the most. So the more you can handle, the more they'll give you. And you want your profile to show them, hey, I can handle whatever you give me. And then we go to step 2. You leverage it.
Okay.
How hard it is to save $30,000. When you take your...
And you hard it is for who?
It's hard for a lot of people to save $30,000 when you have a
You said save $30,000.
Yeah,
okay.
But
that's difficult. That's difficult.
Yeah. So now I got this score, and I'm juggling, and they're loving it. What do I do with it? I don't buy cars. I don't buy gold chains. I don't buy diamond earrings. I don't buy $4,000 purses because, yes. Or you buy a two-unit and you rent out the one downstairs and let them pay the mortgage while you live rent-free. Or you buy a multifamily and rent out the whole thing and let that pay for your new house and your new car and your new purse, because now you can get the purse. It depends on your exit strategy, which is step three. So step two, with your credit leveraging, you can go get $30,000. That $30,000 could be your down payment and closing costs. Your operating expenses are how much is the mortgage and the light bill and the gas bill until you get a tenant, because you don't want to rush. You want to get the perfect tenant in there. And mm-hmm. the tenant is going to pay not 1 month security, 1 month's rent. The tenant is going to pay a move-in fee. That's what they all pay. A move-in fee means, okay, I want $1,300 for rent. Move-in fee is $1,000. You take that move-in fee, and that's, you don't get that back. This is what it costs to move in here. Because when you move out, it's going to cost me money to paint, fix things that are broke, this and that, and it's going to come out that. But you pay a move-in fee. When you do move out, I'm going to have expenses, and it's going to come out this move-in fee. Now, when you say 1 month rent, 1 month security, I take what I need out of security and give you the change. We don't give change anymore, because you have to increase your success rate, and they have to have something up that says, hey, well, if I tear this property up, I'm liable. And the average cost of a turnover is this. One tenant out, tenants out, moves out. You have to turn over the apartments for another tenant to come in. So the average turnover cost is $1,500 to $2,500 to prepare for the next tenant. You're only getting $1,000. So just say your tenant is there for 2-3 years and they move out. You got to replace carpet and you got to paint. You're probably at about, what, a $1,200, maybe $800-$900. Fix the toilet handle here. You might need a new vanity cap, little things like that. You know what I'm saying? And it takes your time and you have to pay the workers and things like that if you don't know how to fix it yourself. But you leverage your credit to the point where you know, okay, your one and only job is to keep a tenant in that establishment. So you leverage your credit and you get some income property. Now your income has increased. Your tax advantages has increased. Even if you do personal business, they increase even more. But personal, you write off all the interest that you have paid, all the taxes that you have paid, all the expenses that you have incurred doing this, you write all of that off. And that's just from you leveraging your credit. Now your exit strategy, what is it? Do you want to fix it and flip it? Do you want to sell it? Now there's very little carrying costs with that. Do you want to have a tenant? Do you want to move in and have a tenant downstairs? What is your exit strategy? Meaning at the end of all this, when everything is fixed and done, what do you want out of it?
Okay.
What do you want? You know that going in. Because you can't pick your team, which is step four, without knowing what you want out of it, because then that's going to determine which team you pick and who you pick. Okay, my exit strategy is I want to rent it out and collect money until I sell it.
Okay.
All of that's fine. All of it works. People will tell you this works, that doesn't work in real estate, this isn't working, because that's their experience. I'm telling you from what I learned and know, all of it works. Buying from tax auctions, subject to all kind of ways to buy property. It all works depending on your strategy. And here's the main thing why it works. How did you get the property? If you pay too much for it and you only got one way to exit, it's not good, because you just rolled the dice. If you pay a nice amount for it, and it's in a decent neighborhood, decent meaning, who do you want to deal with? Because they say, this neighborhood is bad. Oh, man, it's terrible over here. Why is it nowhere to park in those neighborhoods? Because it's a million people living there.
Yeah.
Do you deal with them or not? If you don't want to deal with them, do you shop in a better neighborhood? Because you're going to get what you get from them. You're going to get money. You're going to get all that kind of stuff like that. It's going to happen. But do you even want to deal with it? So you pick your team because you want to do your exit strategy. And okay. Once you know, okay, you can go in those bad neighborhoods and you can get a jumbo loan and purchase the whole block. And you have a fantastic block and you got the speed bumps up and you got the lights on and you gave everybody the ring when you sold the house, and there's heavy police rotation on the block, and things like that. It's not everything's fair play. Your credit, then you leverage your credit to get the money. Then you have your exit strategy. The exit strategy will tell you what team to pick. And then once you pick your team, you have to vet them in, or you have to have accountability partners for them.
Okay. So before we go into the team part, I just want to review it real quick. So first is the credit.
Yep.
And you need a 680 with two primary trade lines.
Yes.
One that's at least 10 years. It can be a authorized user. And then at least one trade line that's 5K or better with a low utilization. And that's the score plus the profile together. That's what it all needs to look like. Yes. Then it's about leveraging the credit. So that's essentially, that's applying for credit in order to make deals happen, right?
Yeah.
And then it's about the exit strategy. It's, are you going to do a single family fix and flip? Are you going to do a 4-unit rental and you live in one of the four and rent out the other three, or whatever the case may be?
Okay. Yeah.
So before we go into your team, right, before we go into building a team, I want to run my ad real quick. You can tell me how I do.
Come on. Break it down.
All right. So this week's episode is sponsored by ActiveCampaign. Who ActiveCampaign is. So ActiveCampaign is the, in my opinion, the leader of email marketing. You can go to the other guys that are more pricey. You can go to other guys that are a little bit, in my opinion, a little bit clunky and hard to use. But ActiveCampaign gets the job done. They tie into your website. They track usage on your website. They allow you to continuously market to those people who actually matter. My question is, what is your opinion, because you know who they are, of ActiveCampaign?
I like ease of use, and that's what ActiveCampaign has. It, what I mean by ease of use is I want to do what I'm doing. I don't want to have to go to school to learn a tool to do what I'm doing. And ActiveCampaign makes it, once I study and get my learning curve down, I'm a brainiac, and I can use ActiveCampaign to what I needed to do. It's set up right there. You can get right to it, and they have packages that allow you to build. I don't need the most expensive thing right now because I'm building, and it works for me.
I heard that, because I know I started with ActiveCampaign with a free trial, and then $500, and then I built up from there, and it works for me. So if anybody listening want to try ActiveCampaign, just go over to jhugh.com/ActiveCampaign. You get a 2-week free trial, all that good stuff. And the best thing about it is you call them up. There's no automated system. You call them up and you talk to somebody. Once again, ActiveCampaign is at jhugh.com/ActiveCampaign. Okay. So, Mr. Ford.
Yes, sir.
We're on step 4, your team. Now, what I know about real estate and building wealth, right? You got to have a lawyer, at least one. Some people suggest more than that, but you got to have a lawyer. Mm-hmm. You got to have a realtor.
Yep.
You got to have a contractor. Actually, I've been told you got to have three. But other than those functions, what more do you need?
Would you say lawyer, realtor?
And contractor. Yeah.
You need counsel.
Now, counsel, you mean like an advisor?
Yes.
Okay. So now with these four roles, right? Because you're the buyer, or should I say the manager. So with these four roles, realtor, the lawyer, the contractor, the counsel, what qualities are you looking for between those four people?
Dependability. And you're looking for answers.
Okay. Now, do these four people work together, or do they just work with you?
You want to be important to them. You want to be important. You don't want to be in the middle of a deal and they go blank. You don't want to be in the building stages of your deal and their personal life is problematic. And I'm just being honest. If they have 7 kids and they're always picking them up and they're always, they have a lot of responsibility, that's fine. That's fine. God bless them. God bless their family situation, all that kind of stuff. But you're trying to get deals done, and it's no room for it's just no room for you always having to be the one to wait. You always have to be the one to sacrifice the situation. You always have to be the one to put things off till tomorrow. It's not going to work. You can't learn like that. You can't be consistent like that. You will lose deals like that. People will not take you seriously like that. You have to be important to the person that you're doing a deal with. And that is not by words.
Okay.
That is not by words. If you're important to that person, you'll be offered information that you didn't know. You'll be offered strategies. You'll be offered, the conversation will go different. Hey, if anything you need, give me a call. Everyone says that. Hey, I looked over this deal. Here's what I suggest. I want you to think about this. Blah, 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 blah. There's a difference.
There is a difference.
That's one of the differences right there, because this person took the time to look over the deal and say, hey, this deal will be good for this, because you'll make this amount of money if you do this. And this, oh, look at this neighborhood. Oh, this is fantastic. This is it. I think you should keep this one. Because this neighborhood gets $1,650 from Section 8 and worth of rent. And you only paying this, and it's worth that. Sure, this was your exit strategy, but listen to this. You can pull the money out. I know you want to sell it and make money, but you can refinance and take the money out, put a tenant in. The tenant will pay back the loan. The money you get is free, and you can take the money, and that will be what you would get if you sold it. So you would get the same money if you get when you sold it, plus you still get to keep it, plus you still get the monthly income. So now you went from getting paid once to getting paid three times. How's it three times? You get paid when you refinance, you get paid monthly from the tenant, and you get paid again from Uncle Sam when you write off all those taxes and all those write-offs from owning it. And that's so someone well-versed and someone that has your best interest will say, hey, I know this was our exit strategy, but think about this. That don't mean you have to go with it, but you want people that's in your corner to the point where they help you think. You ever been in a situation and someone outside the situation could tell you about the situation because they're not in it, so they can tell you about it? Happens to all of us. We all need that person that's outside that can see from a helicopter point of view, because we're right in it. We're in the ring. Oh, here's my credit profile. Here's my credit leveraging. Here's my exit strategy. I ain't picking my team. But then someone from the team says, hey, check this out. Did you see this? The house across the street sold for $30,000 more than what you have it listed for. You see what I'm saying? So, yeah, your team has to have your best interest. Even if I'm not saying they were supposed to call you at 4 and they don't call you till the next day. That's not what I'm saying. When they do call you the next day, you catching up, you pick up the conversation where you left off at, and they're able to answer your questions. You want a team with answers.
Right.
You don't want nobody that don't know, because you don't know. And you don't have a teammate that you're paying and he don't know either, or she. You want somebody that knows. And then sometimes, even with the contractors, sometimes having three, that's cool, but where's your other lawyer? Where's your other realtor? Where's your other that you're bumping ideas off of and stuff like that? Do you, first thing you want to know is, do you have a realtor?
So you need multiple of each one.
Without saying it, because once a realtor knows that you have another realtor, they're not going to want to answer questions. They're not going to want to cross the other realtor out. But who's accountable? Who's your realtor's accountability partner? Because if you're asking a question that you don't know, who else do you have to bump the idea off of? There's Facebook groups and things like that. But who else that has your best interest says, okay, think about this. Now, this realtor's been a realtor for 20 years. This one's been a realtor for 5. They're both valuable because one has the experience and one has the updated knowledge. Just because you've been 20 years don't mean what's going on right now.
Right.
Last time that you go get some new hours, the new laws that came out, the new things that's going on, the new strategies, the new lenders. You working with all your old people because y'all joined at the hip. Y'all done folded deals and you went on trips together and gave each other Christmas cards. So you locked in with your people. But what's up with the new people?
Right.
So just like your credit profile, you need something 10 years old and you need something recent. You need something for $500 limit. You need something for $10,000 limit. Okay. Just like your wedding vows, something old, something new.
Something borrowed, something blue.
No, you need both spectrums. You need both spectrums because you ultimately want to win. We're past the stage of a good try in the conversation. Don't be one of those guys in the barbershop that you gave a good try. Everything you do, you gave it your best, and nothing came through. That's not how you leave a legacy for your family, for your kids. That good try stuff, we're not. That's not what we're doing. We ain't breaking even either.
Show you right.
We ain't breaking
all,
even.
In the wealth game, it's about making money. In the wealth game, it's about making more money.
Yes.
Period.
We here to make money. Let's make it. Now, not going to be greedy. It's enough for everybody. It's plenty. So let's get to it. Let's do it. And when you pick your team, now another thing about your team, don't be scared to joint venture. A lot of people are scared of that because they say to themselves, first thing they say is, man, I made 15 and they made 15. If I did this myself, I would have made the whole 30. You can't think like that. You cannot think, you do yourself a disservice thinking like that because you have a network. This person has a network.
Right.
So this person's network may do the one thing to push the deal through. Or somebody in your network may do the one thing to push the deal through.
Mm-hmm.
Because you might be thinking that, but they might be thinking that as well. Also, a joint venture gives you the room to do this. You just leveraged your credit, your exit strategy. Now you're picking your team. And you pick your team, and you got $50,000. You only need $15,000 for the closing costs. You get you joint venture. Now you only need $7,000. So you have room to do the other house that the guy offered that you couldn't get. You have room to do that one by yourself. So you got three contractors, right? Ain't that what we discussed?
Yeah.
So if one contractor is already on the joint venture one, what are the other two doing?
Nothing.
They're ready and available, but you got enough money to do the other one.
Right.
And you already got your team to do the other one. You got two other contractors that aren't doing nothing because you picked the one you wanted for that one. Joint venture gives you the room to do that. So with your joint venture, you made 15, and with your own, you made 20, and whoever you borrowed the money from, you made your payment to them, and your tenant is the one paying it back. So it's yours. Now, what are you doing with your money? You rinse and repeat. 1 through 6, how's my credit? Okay, I filled out for some things. I need those inquiries to come off from what, okay, I got 4 inquiries because I just did this deal and did that deal. I need those inquiries off. That's 40 more points higher. Okay, let me do that. Okay, I got some usage on this. Okay, I got the minimum payment on automatic pay.
Right.
On all my cards. Minimum payment may be $25. If I ever forget, I don't have a late payment. So now, but I need that usage to come down. I'm at 42%. Let me bring that down to about 10 because I'm applying for new credit. So all this is going to update within that next 30 days while you're finding your next deal. Once that updates, boom, now your credit is where it is. Now credit leveraging. You need to go get some more money because you got a tenant here that's paying back the other money. So that's fine. You need to go get some more money. Nah, I'm cool. I don't need any more money because I don't even want any more debt. Okay, because my credit profile says I shouldn't get any more debt. All right, what's my exit strategy for this one? What's my team for this one? Mm-hmm. Now I got to choose the right property, and now I got to choose the right tenant. So if that's where you're going, if you're using the tenant, then you're doing that. Then you choose. It's the same strategy for every deal. Same one for every deal because you go back and tighten things up. When you make mistakes, you go back and tighten things up, and you keep going.
Okay, and so after all of this, so we've said credit, we've mm-hmm. said credit leveraging, exit strategy, building your team. The only two things left is choosing the right property and choosing the right tenant. Now, the right property, correct me if I'm wrong, the right property would be based off of what your exit strategy is.
Yes.
Tenant would be based off of what the property is. So for the second time, because we, unless you want to go over, we're coming up on that time frame. So with the property side of it, would you suggest a new investor, developer, go for a single family or possibly 2, 3, 4 multi-unit property?
A brand new investor, knowing what I know, there's two things I would do with a new investor. Multifamily will be first.
Multifamily.
Because it's income immediately. So if you have an income now and you get a multifamily and you get income from one property and you move in it, you think you have one income, but you don't. You have two incomes still, even though you're living in one. Here's why. You're not paying anything out. So that money stays in the house as income. You got one coming in and you're not paying anything out on the other one. So that counts as income to me. Anyone listening to this podcast, if you have a car note, right now, if you have a car note, some people say don't pay the car off, depending on what your strategy is. Do you want more money coming in? Because if you have a $500 car note and that car note is erased and you have $500 not going out, the $500 that not going out, is it, but it used to go out, isn't that money coming in? So depending on what you want to do. So there's still two incomes anyway you look at it. Now, if you get a multifamily and you rent out both and you still have something going on over here, it's still two incomes. You know why? Because you have two properties. So you're getting the income and the tax breaks and whatever you money you pulled out from over here. Plus, you're getting the tax breaks from over here. And the money you pulled out from one is still paying off the one over here. That's one. And the other one is a single family home over 1,300 square feet in a medium to good neighborhood. Because if you buy that house the right way, you can refinance, pull money out, and still rent it out, which is still counting income. So you get paid three times. That, now you're back to your three times. You're back to your refinance, monthly, and your taxes. You're back to your three times. But you want that clump of money. And their base hits. All of this is getting on base. You're not going to get $100,000 from each deal. If you do, God bless you. Man. So don't be scared of the $5,000 here, the $2,500 here, the $10,000 here. And you're positioning yourself for the, when the home run comes down the pipe, you're already in position. You got the little cash reserves you need. You got this, you got that, you got that. Oh, here's a deal. You can make $200,000 off this one deal. Okay, cool. Smack it out the park and then keep going, keep getting on base. But that's what I would tell a new person. When you're choosing the right property, go multifamily because you automatically gonna get an income. And then, or if you do single family, pick the perfect one that you would want to live in and everybody else. And then choosing the right tenant after that is just take your time and run everybody's background. If they're from your church, run their background. If they come to your house, they have $12,000 in their pocket and they show you their bank account with $1.4 million and they got, run their credit profile, run their background, see what's going on. Just see what's going on. Here's what you're looking for. People that they did not pay where they lived.
Okay.
They might have a hospital bill. Creditors don't even care about those. They might have cars that they had an accident in, stuff like that, whatever. And then ask, listen to the story that they have. Find out who's all living there. Find out, well, I got a big family there, this and that. Okay. And you're the person that they all live with when they come home from jail, when they come home from college, when they come home. Find out who you're dealing with for the long run. Find out who you're dealing with for the long run so that you will know, you'll be informed, because you want premeditated moves with this. You don't want to hope and wish. Ain't no wish. Ain't no hope. Ain't no I'll deal with it as it comes. You want to say, okay, this might happen, that might happen, and then you prepare for it. You let them know up front. Put it in your lease. Hey, I get to come check this place out every 3 months. And so if there's anything broke, I can get to fix it. And then the stuff that you need to pay for, you're going to pay for it, because you don't want them to leave and all this stuff is built up. And it's a big calamity. So and there's no just, oh, man, I hope this worked out the way it worked out for him, because he got on the podcast and he explained it down and explained it. No, no, you need to be informed. What's going on? Okay. Do you find out, is their husband abusive? I need to ask you a personal question. You guys don't fight a lot, nothing like that. Do you beat each other up and stuff like that? I ask everybody this. Don't mind me. Make it a joke or whatever, but you got to find out what's going on with those people. Don't assume anything, because they come with their best presentation. And that's how you pick the right tenant. If you find yourself going another month, go to other month. Go to other month, because everybody pays good for 6 months and then they fall off. You want that person that you want to talk to the other landlord. You want to go visit the other house. You want to do things like that. Now, you're not taking the other landlord's opinion. You're seeing what you can deal with, because as you listen, you find out who you're dealing with. That's all I'm saying. Find out who you're dealing with and then deal with them accordingly if you choose to have them as your tenant. But be upfront with everything. If you need to modify the lease to put some stuff in there, put it in there. If you start selling any drugs, that's an automatic termination of this lease. Go get it notarized. Make sure they're there. Make sure they agree. Okay, if I sell drugs, I already said that I would move out right away, no matter what the courts say. No taking it to court. No police this, no police that. And you take that, you get it notarized. And so when you go to court, they can't live there for 6, 7, 8 months to a year before you get them out. The court says you signed this, and when you went and got this notarized, you agreed to this, and this, what you did, terminated your lease. You don't have a lease right now, and you said that you would move, so you knew what you were doing, so you got to go. I don't know where else you're going, but you this is what you said. So I'm not saying don't make them your tenant, but make the necessary adjustments. So that's choosing the right property and choosing the right tenant. So credit leveraging as a strategy, team, choosing the right property and choosing the right tenant. When you pick your tenant, customize your lease. Customize it.
So it's not just a blanket general lease that you can print out online or LegalZoom or Rocket Lawyer. Like, you really want to go through it with a fine-tooth comb for each individual tenant.
You want to go through it because you want to put stuff in there. I use Law Depot for my contracts. I use Law Depot. And they go through, you can make up a residential lease in Law Depot, but you can customize it down to the letter in Law Depot. And it's so easy. Like, again, I like user-friendly things. So Law Depot, all you have to do is answer the question, and they'll do the whole lease for you. They do the state laws. They know what state you're in. The state law is in there already set out. They have all the basic things in there. $25 late fee. Do you want to increase it? They did a little spot. Okay, I want my late fee to be $75 to encourage them not to be late. You can customize every part of it and then get it notarized. Go through the lease with them and get it notarized. Here's another thing. We sign the lease. You get your keys after you show me the light bill and the gas bills in your name. Hey, I'm emailing you the lease, sign it. Let's go get it notarized. Okay, cool. All right. Change over the light bill. And then here's your lease. You need a lease to do it. Change the lights and gas over to your name, and then I'll give you the keys. That's when I give out keys. You can't stay here for you can't stay here for 2-3 weeks and the rest of the month, and I got to keep calling you, ask you, is the light bill still in my name? No, I'm not paying for your lights and your gas. I don't know how many refrigerators you got plugged up and how many game systems that y'all leave on all night long. I don't know. Send me your light bill, your gas bill that's in your name, and you have the keys.
Okay, then. That one, I know a lot now. I ain't know that one, though.
Okay.
Okay. Okay. So, get your credit together, leverage your credit, figure out what your exit strategy is, build the right team, choose the right property, choose the right tenant. Now, for anybody who wants to work directly with you, I know we're recording this in mid to late August, right? I know you got the new At That Bread website coming in the next few weeks. So for anybody who wants to work directly with you in order to for them to go through the six steps of getting their first income property, where should they go?
There's all avenues. I work together with my wife, and we have Fix and Flip with the Fords. Again, my name is James Ford. We will have a Fix and Flip with the Fords. We already do have the Facebook page and the YouTube, and it's at Mr. and Mrs. Ford 3 on Instagram. Facebook is at Mr. and Mrs. Ford, and YouTube is at Mr. and Mrs. Ford. Our contact info are on those pages. And also, that page will be on atthatbread.com. And also, I'll have a mentoring site called workwithj.com. That'll be the mentoring site, meaning you can sign up and we'll walk through everything. I'll walk you through it and do as many AV deals with you until you want to fly on your own. You will have resources that you will be able to use on your own, introduce you to people. I'll show you how to leverage your credit, show you how to build your credit. I'll show you how to get things off your credit that you want off. I'll show you where to get your own trade lines, different websites you can register for to be a trade line dealer. I'll show you those. And I also have a 12-page list of lenders in every area, from cars to stores, department stores, gas cards, and lines of credit in your business, lines of credit in your personal, high-balance credit cards. I have a 12-page list that you will be able to acquire. Also, atthatbread.com is going to be the main focus, but it'll be links to everything that we have going on. And like I said, the social media is Mr. and Mrs. Ford, at Mr. and Mrs. Ford, and ATB Development is on Facebook. ATB Home Remodeling is on Instagram. And the main mentoring site where I'll have the six steps to acquiring your first income property and the mentoring program will be on workwithj.com.
And of course, we will have all of those links in the show notes for you guys to be able to go and get. Jay, I want to thank you for coming through and blessing the mic with the podcast here and really just dropping jewels, dude. Dropping absolute jewels. I know I got a lot out of it. I'm hoping the listeners got a lot out of it. And I just want to remind people, man, first and foremost, this episode is sponsored by Active Campaign. Can't forget to put that in there. Just to remind you, man, good, better, best. Don't let it rest until your good is better and your better is best.